to Belgium because the alleged mastermind of the Paris attacks is supposedly Belgian. And Catherine, you're in Brussels. Are you in a lockdown situation at the moment, or are you free to move about?
We're free to move about because there have been, well, movement restrictions were just lifted. So we're now, there was a suspected bomb found across the road, but that's been cleared. So now, yeah, we're free to move about.
And that was a false alarm, was it?
It was, yeah, it was a French car parked outside some of the European institutions, and they saw a suitcase inside, and so robots came and dismantled some poor person's car.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so it turned out to be a false alarm. But things are obviously very tense, and all morning, all we can hear from our office is the sound of police sirens, and there were a couple of bangs that we could hear from Molenbeek, which is an area of Brussels relatively near where I work, and that's where a lot of the searches are going on.
It's where a lot of the migrant community, well, let's just say it would be an ethnically very diverse part of the city. Tell me a little bit more about it.
It's where the historic migrant population resides, so not the recent influx of Syrian and Afghani refugees, but rather the Moroccan origin, Algerian origin, Belgian citizens who've been living here for a few generations. They tend to live there, and it's really a case study in, you know, you could say failed integration and how not to integrate populations into a country, because everybody agrees that it has the highest unemployment rate in Brussels. Belgium in general has the highest difference between the employment rate of white Belgian citizens and non-white Belgian citizens. So it's not been a successful story, and consequently it's a very tense place. We have friends, well, one of my husband's friends is a fireman, and he dreads he dreads calls to Molenbeek, because he says you drive in there and people throw stones at the fire engine. I think the police, to some extent, have treated it like a no-go zone for quite a while, and there hasn't been enough investment really in creating connections between, let's say, the majority Belgian community and people living in areas like Molenbeek who arrived here as guest workers. And I think most people in Belgium just expected them to go back home afterwards, and they stayed, but they weren't integrated, and consequently you have a lot of social tension there, and now unfortunately seems links with some of the attacks in Paris.
And does that surprise you that second or first and second generation population of migrants should be so radicalized?
It doesn't really. I mean, just an example, like my daughter goes to school in a very mixed school, and many of the women there wear headscarves. And when I talked to them a few years ago, they were not wearing a headscarf, but they were, and then they got married, they're Muslim, and they put on their headscarf, and they said they'll never get a job interview with a headscarf, and they often even don't get invited to interview because of their names. And these are people, they're not uneducated, you know, these are people who speak French, Dutch, and English, have great qualifications, but they're very excluded from the labour market by tacit prejudice, and then also by a very rigid labour market in Belgium. The trades unions are very strong, and they tend to make sure that newly arrived populations are not easily able to integrate into the labour market. So it doesn't really surprise me at all.
And you would know quite a bit about newly arrived migrants. You've taken in an Afghan family.
We have a family living with us at the moment since last week. I mean, a lot of citizens in Brussels and in Belgium have really mobilized in response to the arrival of a lot of Syrian and Afghani refugees in September. And the authorities obviously provide accommodation, emergency accommodation, but there's just been so many people arriving that people have been sleeping out on the streets, you know, lying out in the rain for days on end. So this family came to our house last Monday. They've been on the road for 3 months. They came from Afghanistan through Iran, Turkey, got a boat to Greece, and then the usual route of the migrants. And yeah, so they're staying with us so now.
How is it all working out? I mean, do you speak Pashto or do they speak English?
No, they actually, they're from a minority group in Afghanistan, the Hazari, so they speak Farsi, and I do not speak any Farsi, and they speak no word of any European language. So it's a question of sign language, and then we've invited to the house a girl I know who speaks Iranian, Farsi, and so she's helped us to translate. And my
That's
husband
some amazing commitment on
boy.
Your part, yeah. though, Catherine, because, you know, presumably you and your husband discussed that you can't make an offer like this to people just for a month or two. It could be a very long-term commitment.
Yes, I mean, in this case, they have an appointment to lodge their asylum application next week, and then the government would take them in charge and send them to a reception centre.
Okay.
And so these are, you know, temporary stays.